Hello, and welcome to Power Pros Podcast, Episode 71, Echoes of Time. I am your host, The Hoff, Chris Hoffman, and with me is my co-host, Scott Michella.
Hi, Chris.
Hello. We are back, of course, once again to talk about what's going on in the world of Nintendo. We'll be talking about the recently released NES Classic. We'll be talking about some mobile games. And then we'll have our big topic this week, which is about the 15th anniversary of the GameCube. That's right, it's been 15 years, so our big topic is going to be the system's 15 most noteworthy games. But before we get to that, let's start by talking about the long-awaited, highly anticipated NES Classic. Scott, you and I had quite an adventure hunting this thing down when it came out last week.
We did. Yeah, you know, it wasn't as hard to get as people are saying. If you did have the time to stand in line at a brick and mortar, I think you would have been guaranteed to get one of these.
Yeah.
If you decided to go the online route, you were really like gambling with your chances.
Yeah, they did put up online orders for these things really early in the morning when it went on sale, basically right after midnight Pacific time. And I think a lot of people were able to get them. You know, I tried fooling around with it, and I think I was able to get through. But, you know, in the end, that's not the way I decided to go, although I was able to secure a system.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we ended up going out like super early, way earlier than we needed to.
Too early. I'm going to say too early.
Yes.
I didn't know how early. And honestly,
well, it's a good question.
You know, it is. Because if you talk to somebody right now who doesn't have one of these and you say like, oh, what? How early would you have waited in line for this thing? Or how long would you have waited? I think most of the people who are desperate for one of these would have said like hours. Like how many hours? Maybe three, maybe four. Well, that's exactly how long I waited with you in line for one of these. 4 hours.
Yeah, considering the hype, considering how much people want these things, waiting that amount of time does not seem crazy, but it wasn't really necessary.
No, I've waited longer for an autograph.
Yeah, I mean, I've waited longer for Amiibo, I think.
Okay.
But yeah, you went out there at 4 in the morning, right?
That's right. That's right, because Target in my area opens at 8. So I went and got and thought, oh, I should wake up early. I was thinking of waking up at 5, but I woke up on my own at 4 and thought, well, if I go back to sleep now at 5 o'clock, there's no way I'm going to wake up. So I got out of bed and got out to the store, and I waited for... And then I tweeted at you. I was by myself. I was the only one, obviously, at the store.
Yes, you were. No one else was there.
2 hours later, you joined me.
I was there at 5:30, so it was about an hour and a half.
Okay, hour and a half.
But so 5:30, I got there.
5:30, now...
I brought donuts, at least.
That's right, donuts. Now there's two of us in front of the Target. And I'm thinking, well, when's the next person going to show up? Why?
Yeah, it seemed really pointless to stand in line if no one else was going to be there.
I waited for a launch day iPad when the iPad was first announced and released. And I was in line at 5 a.m., and there was already 6 people in front of me. And, you know, by the time, like, 8 o'clock rolled around... There was a line, you know, all the way down the block. So I just expected something akin to that, and what we got was nothing like that. So the next person to show up after Chris and I, this is hours later, was at like...
Nobody joined us until like 6:30.
That's right.
6:30, so, like two more people showed up.
Nobody joined us until much later. It was
And then, but then, you know, it was a very, very slow... trickle of people, you know, just a couple more. But then by 7:30, it was a pretty big line.
Yeah.
And I think I would say anybody that got there by 7:30, though, probably got a system. And there was, you know, probably about, you know, 21 to 24 people there. That's how many systems they had.
Yep.
So, you know, it worked out pretty well. You didn't have to get there super early.
Yeah, if you got there an hour before a Target opened.
Or even half an hour.
If your Target was, or even half hour, if your Target was anything like the one by my house here in the Bay Area, which is a very crowded place, you would have gotten one of these. Now, some stores I know only got like 5 units.
Yeah, and, a couple of them did. But some got like 60 or more.
Yeah, so
it really varied.
So if you don't have one, it's either you didn't wake up early enough, you were at work and couldn't go, or you tried just to do the online thing because it was easier.
Well, I mean, it is kind of dumb that you can't just go into a store in the middle of the day on launch day, or
it's true.
You know, get there right when they open and go in and buy one.
Yeah, there should have been enough of these.
And, you know, that kind of sucks. It would be great if you could just walk in and buy one. Yeah. On the other hand, waiting half an hour or so to get one isn't the end of the world. Like you said, we've both had to go through way worse. Amiibo was way, way worse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of systems have been worse. So all things considered, it wasn't as horrible as it could have been.
Yeah, and so you were able to get a controller.
Yes.
And they only got, the Target store only got, the one that we went to, only got one controller.
That's
and that
right.
was the case with a lot of stores. They only got one or two controllers.
Mm-hmm.
And they got,
yeah, it was, you know, pretty ridiculous.
Many more systems. So the controllers are selling on eBay for mad amounts of money. So anyway, it's a shame that there's now a secondary market for these things. But you know, the way
that's the problem. That's the problem with them not having the pre-orders.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in and of itself, it's not that bad. But the fact that people couldn't get them, the fact they couldn't secure them, the fact they couldn't pre-order them, I think really caught the scalpers' attention. And that's why there were so many scalpers out there buying these things and selling them on eBay for crazy amounts,
or
trying to anyway. Now there's like thousands on there that, you know, hopefully no one's going to buy those. I mean, I think that's kind of the thing I want to pass along to people who weren't able to get these, is that they shouldn't panic. I don't think Nintendo is intentionally constricting supply. I think they put out as many as they can. I think somehow they were caught off guard about the popularity, and they're going to keep putting them out there, though.
Yeah,
they're going to get out there.
Yeah.
In a few months, there will be tons. You know, maybe you won't be able to get one for the holidays, which is kind of lame.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's no need to pay these outrageous eBay prices. They will be all over the place in a matter of months, I think.
I agree. I think the way Nintendo is handling the manufacture of this is that, you know, if you build up a huge machinery to make a ton of these units all at once, you could wind up with a big surplus. So their other option is just make enough machinery to make barely enough of these things just for the first few weeks, and then use the same amount of machinery to just keep cranking these out on a regular basis. And that's how the Wii launch went. And so Wii units were scarce for the first year of their existence. So I expect something very similar with this. And it's going to be very much like the Amiibo as well.
Right. And Nintendo was a pretty cautious company.
They're very conservative. And it doesn't necessarily hurt their bottom line, because they're still going to sell as many of these as people will want to buy. But it's going to take them longer to make their money back, because, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, they don't like the fact that people want these things and they can't sell them to them, because there is money that, you know, is just kind of sitting on the table there that they can't get.
They're leaving a bunch of money on the table. That's right.
But, you know, I hear people, you know, people were really, really enraged last Friday when they couldn't get them. I hear people say, oh, I'm never going to, you know, buy this thing now if I couldn't get it on launch day. I'm just going to pirate these games instead.
Yeah.
All kinds of crazy things. Hopefully that's calmed down now. Hopefully people realize Nintendo's not trying to screw them over. And, you know, just wait a bit and, you know, you'll be able to get the system.
Yep.
And of course, you know, the question is it worth it now that we got our hands on, now that we've tried it, that we've played it?
Yeah.
What do you think? Are you enjoying your system?
I am enjoying it. It's.
I certainly am, yeah.
You know, I have an NES and I have a ton of games.
Yeah, I've still got my classic one, my original.
And it's modded, so it's HD, so it actually looks better than this NES when hooked up to my television. But the nice thing about this is the save states and the interface is much more pleasant. Switching between games is a lot less friction. And
yeah, it's pretty fast to
Honestly, the save states are really what sells me on this. It's
very
unfortunate
handy.
There is some input lag, and that's unavoidable when you're playing a game.
Well, I mean, it really depends on your TV. I mean, I've got a game mode where it's, you know, not really noticeable at all.
Okay.
So on the other hand, I played on a TV before that, where it was quite noticeable, and games that I know really well, like Mega Man 2 or Zelda 2. I was like, oh man, how can I even play these? But I was glad to see that it was just the TV and it works great online.
Even if your screen's response rate is really good, there's still an unavoidable amount of input lag because the game is emulated. So games like...
But for the most part, it's imperceptible if you have a decent TV.
The only... And here's the only instance where it really makes a difference is Punch-Out.
I was going to say, yeah, fighting Mike Tyson.
Fighting Mr. Dream with any amount of input lag is going to be next to impossible. I'm not even kidding about that. So I defy you to try to beat Mike Tyson's or Mr. Dream, punch out with Mr. Dream or whatever the heck they're calling it. I defy you to beat that with this NES Classic. I bet it takes you days because you're just going to have to luck into beating him.
He's a tough customer. As it is, but I'm saying there's not any input lag to worry about. Don't all be right. freaking people about input lag.
It doesn't matter what TV you have. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out's going to be harder. Trust me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, milliseconds.
And there are some complaints about the audio emulation being a little off. It definitely is.
I haven't noticed any problem with the sound of the audio on mine, but I've certainly noticed some audio lag.
Okay.
And that seems like it's off by like...
a few milliseconds.
I don't know. I was getting it for like almost half a second, maybe, it seemed like, in some cases.
Did you switch to another television?
No. I've only got one HD TV.
I see. So. Yeah, that's trouble.
But it's very on and off. Sometimes it seemed... like it was off by half a second or more, and then sometimes it seems perfectly fine. So it's kind of intermittent, maybe, or I don't know what the deal is. But that is something I was certainly noticing. Yeah. That does seem to be a bit of an issue. But it's not nearly the same sort of issue as input lag,
because
you know, it's not going to throw your game off. It is a little annoying, though.
Yeah, that is annoying. So I didn't notice any perceived audio issue, but I have a 4K TV and it doesn't upscale 720p sources very well. So I had to do some sort of crazy like Rube Goldberg machine to get this thing looking good on my TV, which involved...
Also, does it finally look good? Because when we first started playing it, it was like rounding and smoothing all the little pixels, and we didn't know what was going on.
So square pixels became circles. Yeah, it was turning the square pixels into circles. It was smoothing and rounding everything off, and I was like, "This is terrible." And I thought it was the NES doing it, and of course, it was my 4K TV. So the solution was I had to buy another piece of equipment, an upscaler that upscales from 1080p to 4K, so that the TV's upscaler wouldn't kick in. So even though this upscaler is not that great, it's light years better than what the TV was doing on its own. So I got the NES Classic going into the FrameMeister to get it up to 1080p because it's only 720p. And then from the FrameMeister, it goes into this DVD-O iScan Micro, and then it's going into the TV. So it's pretty silly that's the only way I'm going to get square pixels out of this thing. But yeah, that was the $80 solution to my problem.
Yeah, but I think the moral to the story is the hardware seems pretty good, but you're going to have to cope with some problems that might, you know, exist in your current electronic setup with your TVs and things like that. It is something to keep in mind.
It does depend on what kind of TV you hook it up to. And if you do, I'd love to see pictures of your 4K setup. If you have a 4K TV at home or monitor and you hook it up to it and it actually looks good, let me know what TV you got.
So what games are you enjoying the most so far?
Mega Man, I dipped into Excitebike for the heck of it. I was having fun with Excitebike. I've started playing Zelda. I haven't played any of the Mario games yet. I'm so burned out on those Mario games, so I haven't played any of those yet.
You were playing all the Metroid when I was over at your place.
I was playing Metroid. I played Metroid for about a half an hour already.
Did you go back to it? Did you stop?
I haven't gone back to it. I want to go back to it. I finished it relatively recently on my 3DS, so I'll come back to it a little bit later. I'd like to go through Zelda 2. I haven't done that in years.
Yeah, that was one of the first ones I started playing.
I played Super C and I realized I don't like Super C. It's too hard. It's
Super C is great.
Nah,
it's
great. Don't like it.
Anyway, use the cheat code. Use the cheat code.
What is the cheat code?
I knew you were going to ask that. God damn it.
Is it the Konami code?
It is not the Konami code.
So what is it?
It is right, left, down, up, A, B, and then start, of course.
Okay.
And that gives you 10 guys. There's no 30-man code, but there is a 10-man code. So use that. It'll help you out. You'll learn the ropes. Doing it with 3 men, pretty darn tough.
Yeah, and obviously I can use save states. I want to get into Star Tropics because I never played it. What have you been? And of course, I finished Mega Man 2 last night, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. So how about you?
Yeah, Mega Man 2 was the first one that I played through. Then I started Zelda 2, and I'm up to the third palace in that. But I've played every single game. I played all the games at least a little bit, just as a refresher, just to have some fun with everything and try the ones I haven't played in forever.
Yeah.
And you know, it was what I expected. All the games that I loved when I was younger, I still love. I love all the Super Mario games. I love the Castlevanias, Punch-Out, Ninja Gaiden, Metroid, Super C. On the other hand, you know, wasn't really feeling Pac-Man. That feels like a pre-NES game to me that I never got into. I mean, yeah, I don't want to knock Pac-Man because it's a classic, but yeah, it's just not my kind of thing.
It's not a great Pac-Man. Pac-Man on, you know, there's a great ColecoVision version of Pac-Man that I like a lot more.
You know, a lot of the older ones just you know, aren't really my thing. Ice Climber's another one I'm not in love with.
And yeah, I played that yesterday.
But Balloon Fight as well.
Ugh, Balloon Fight.
I don't hate it or anything. But,
I don't hate
I'm not going to spend a lot of time
with it. I don't hate
it,
but I hate it for taking up one of these 30 slots. Every other game gets a pass for me, but that's inexcusable. A much better game could have been put in there. I understand it, you know, nostalgia reasons and such, but no, it's not good.
The other
game.
One that kind of, you know, caught me by surprise as not being as good as I remember is Final Fantasy. That's just because RPGs were so archaic back in the day.
Yeah.
They move so slow, and you know, you don't even, if you go to a store to buy equipment, you don't even know which characters it works with.
Yeah.
So it certainly shows its age. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of why I was not an RPG fan at all until the 16-bit era rolled around.
Yeah.
Not to knock it or anything. Mm-hmm. Which screen settings have you been using? You've been using Pixel Perfect the whole time?
No, I'm going with the 4:3 stretch mode.
Me too.
I've been used to seeing, and of course I play on my I have a PVM at home here. If you want to get really nerdy, look up what a PVM is. It's a very high quality broadcast monitor, but it's a CRT. It's a very heavy CRT. So I've got my NES hooked up to that, and it's 4:3 when you play. So that's what I'm used to seeing. So I'm not
4:3, of course, is what I saw as a kid, so that's what I'm doing.
Yep.
But it's nice they have Pixel Perfect in there.
I honestly like the weird one that looks like the old school television
version. Fake interlaced mode.
I actually was using that because the upscaling on my TV was so bad that I just made it look like garbage with that option, it actually looked better.
Yeah, because it makes it all look kind of blurry.
Because made it look like I was playing it on an old television, which I actually enjoyed. So that may be a useful feature for some people whose TVs suck.
Yeah, I haven't really tried out that mode too much, but maybe I'll give it a spin the next time I play Double Dragon or something. But yeah, overall, I'd say, you know, it's a pretty solid selection of games. I've been having a lot of fun with that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I do have a couple other issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those would be the length of the cables that are included with this thing. It's kind of problematic.
Yeah, it is. Especially with the way people's homes are set up now, running wires, you know, all the way from running multiple wires. You're running a power cable. You're running an HDMI cable from your TV all the way over to where you're sitting, because that's where the little console has to be for you to be able to press the reset button. So it's annoying. It's annoying.
Yeah, that's one of the weird and kind of unintuitive things about it, is that to do the save states, you have to hit the reset button.
Yeah.
So you do something that, you know, if you were playing NES as a kid, you would never do. You'd be like, I'm going to save my game. I'm going to hit reset, which
is
very
unintuitive.
It's like the worst thing. No, I'm going to lose all my progress. But no, you do it in this, and it just calls up the menu.
Oh, I've also lost my progress by hitting the reset button, and then
hitting A?
Then if you hit A right away, it relaunches the game and throws away.
Yeah, I just did that today.
It happened to me so many times now that
I just killed my progress in Kirby by doing that.
I've lost like 10 to 20 minutes of progress by doing that, and I've gotten burned by it, so just a warning.
Yeah, be cautious.
Yeah, so that is a bummer. So I have a giant orange extension cable now strung across my living room, and I had to go into the closet and pull out the longest HDMI cable I have, which is like 30 feet. So now I've got these two very long, thick cables running from my TV to my couch, and then I have this console perched up on the coffee table. So it's not ideal. But I'm going to love throwing it in my backpack and taking it on vacation, which I definitely will do. So there are benefits for it being so small and portable.
Yeah, I mean, you really do have to get these long cables and put the system right next to yourself, not only so you can hit that reset button, because the cord on the controller is so darn dinky.
It's so short. I find myself not being able to play comfortably leaning back on the couch because the console is, you know, 3 feet in front of me. So I have to like put my arms like way out in front of myself, like straight out. So There are there's an extension you can buy for the controller. It's not something I'm
gonna have to look into that, purchase, I think.
But I'm probably gonna move the console next to me on the couch at this point and just get longer cables, which is just stupid. But
yeah, I don't know what I'm gonna do because you know the way my room is set up, it's not horribly big. I don't have room to put a coffee table between the TV and the couch.
Yeah.
So. You know, right now, my only solution is to just bring over, like, a dinner tray, put that there, put the NES console on that while I'm playing.
Yeah.
And then when I'm done, it's like, okay, I'll just move this back over next to the TV again. And then, you know, the next time I play, I'll have to do, you know, reset it up again.
Yeah, I hope these things are made out of what they call Nintendium, because I see these things falling off coffee tables, falling off card tables, you know, TV trays, just because, you know, people are going to trip over the cords.
Yeah, you're going to have the cords strewn across the living room, so it's like how it's going to be unavoidable. So that is probably my biggest issue with the system is those short cords.
So I have one major gripe for the purists out there.
Oh?
Yeah. It's something that's kind of sad and annoying and revisionist. And so I was playing Zelda with you.
Oh, yeah.
And we went into the first dungeon, and the old man says Easternmost Peninsula is the key or something. Mm-hmm. And in the original game, the word peninsula is spelled wrong. And in this version, it's spelled right. And I'm wondering what else they went in there and corrected.
Oh, they changed a whole bunch of stuff.
Did
but
they?
It wasn't for this version. When they released The Legend of Zelda on the Zelda Collector's Edition on GameCube back in 2003, it had a new translation. So you might remember in the attract mode, it would say all of treasures, and then it would list all of the items you get throughout the game. One of those was rupees spelled wrong. And that's something else that's changed. Now it says all treasures, rupees is spelled correctly. But that's just one of a number of things that they changed. Back in this 2003 version, which then persisted onto the Game Boy Advance version. And then I think the Wii and Wii U Virtual Console versions, strangely not the 3DS Virtual Console version. That one is the original.
Oh, wow.
It's weird.
Yeah.
So they're fixing the weird janglishy stuff, but it kind of loses some of the charm, I think.
It does. It loses a lot of it. I'm playing these games half out of nostalgia, and if you're just starting to revise history, I just wish they wouldn't have messed with it. It's a shame, and honestly it's a good reason to have an old NES sitting around, because otherwise you won't be able to play these games as they originally intended. You won't be able to play Mike Tyson's Punch Out. You're gonna play crappy Punch Out with Mr. Dream.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the end of the world or anything, but it is kind of weird, and I don't see any reason for them to have changed it.
Yeah.
If they are to do some sort of revision on this thing to a version 2 next year, I'd like them to have the original Zelda. I'd like them to have longer cables. And then something that the two of us were talking about is, you know, maybe what kind of additional games would you want to see added to this thing if they did make a new one?
Now, is this like what we really want, or is it what we think we'll probably possibly get?
I'm going with what I want to see on it. Okay. What I'm hoping for. I'm not saying this is an extremely realistic list, but what games would you want to see add to this thing if you could say add, you know, 10 or so new games to a revised version?
I did have a list, and I started taking things off that I knew in a million years we wouldn't get, but I did leave a couple of those in there just to just to be a pain. I was like, you know what? Heck with you. I'm gonna put my favorite games on here, and and the ones that
licensing be darned,
exactly. But there were a couple I did remove because I knew not a snowball's chance. So
okay, so what would you add?
Okay, first up, Contra, the original Contra. Super C is not the game I wanted. I wanted Contra.
Yep, totally.
DuckTales.
Yep.
I know we're not getting that.
It's highly unlikely, but hey, I mean, Nintendo's got to go through licensing deals with all these companies
anyway.
The heck? I mean, it would basically just mean Nintendo negotiating with both Capcom and Disney to do it.
Yeah, it's not like DuckTales is this huge, expensive property that, you know, they're not going to, like, grant permission to use.
I think it's possible, but that'd be the toughest one so far.
Faxanadu, which is an old favorite of mine, but I know it's not everybody's cup of tea. It's like a side-scrolling adventure RPG.
Yeah, kind of like Simon's Quest.
TMNT, the arcade game. That's TMNT 2, the arcade game. Mega Man 3, because why not, of course. Blaster Master. We were talking about it last week, It reminded me how much I love Blaster Master. It's one of Sunsoft's best games on the NES. 1942, because this system doesn't have a shoot 'em up, and I feel like we need one. And 1942 is a good one.
Well, this one does have Gradius, but fair enough.
And it's one of the first for the NES. Kung Fu. I love Kung Fu. It's my probably my favorite of the Black Box original NES games. That and, obviously Metroid.
Metroid had a silver box, man. Get it straight.
Oh, did it? Oh.
Super Mario Brothers had a black box on the other hand.
You're right. Super Mario Brothers had the black box. You're right. I'm sorry.
But yeah, I don't know what's up with Kung Fu. We never got that on Virtual Console. I feel like Irem's got some issue with Nintendo since it was originally an Irem arcade game. It'd be nice if that would get ironed out for sure.
I love Kung Fu. Pinball. That's another great of the original black box games. It's a good pinball game. It's really fun.
It's solid. I'd take other games over that, but I liked pinball back in the day.
And Tetris. Why didn't we get Tetris? I like Dr. Mario, but I think Tetris would have been really nice because the NES version of Tetris is really solid. It's probably one of the best ports of Tetris.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously, that's a thing they have to license, but like I said, they have to license all these others too. So
yeah.
It'd be nice to see them work that out.
Yeah, how about you?
A lot of the same games, but my list would include Mega Man 1, not 3, Contra, Castlevania 3, DuckTales, just like you, Pro Wrestling, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And if they changed A Winner Is You to You Are Winner, no, they can't do that. A Winner Is You all the way.
Yep.
Dragon Warrior. I know what I said about RPGs, but, it's a classic, so
yeah.
Got to have that Dragon Warrior. River City Ransom, which is included in the Japanese release, the Famicom Mini.
Yep.
Strider.
Oh, Strider, yeah.
Blaster Master, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And then my last would be Maniac Mansion.
Oh, that's great. That's a great adventure game.
It is. And probably a licensing nightmare with the way LucasArts is now.
Yeah, Lucas and Disney and Well, if they work out DuckTales, it could work out Maniac Mansion.
And then, of course, Jellicoe would have to be involved since they were the original publisher on the NES. Anyway, still, even with just the 30 games, even with the short controller cords, even with the occasional wonkiness with the sound, I'm still quite happy with my NES Classic. I think it's a great little system. I think it's totally worth $60. I don't think it's worth crazy eBay prices, but I think that it's really fun, and hopefully Nintendo's got a big hit on its hands. It certainly seems that way.
Definitely. I love mine.
Well, moving along from classic gaming to something that is much more modern, I'm talking about Nintendo's mobile endeavors. They've announced some details on Super Mario Run, specifically that it is coming out on iOS on December 15th, and it is going to be $10. It's actually free to start, as they like to say.
Oh, I didn't know that. Free to start.
Then a $10 in-app purchase to buy the rest of the game.
Okay, I thought it was $10 right out the gate, and I was very upset about that. So
no, it's basically a free playable demo, and then you unlock the rest with a $10 in-app purchase. No other in-app purchases aside from that, just the one. But yeah, that's how it's going to work. It's basically demo, then you unlock the rest. So you're upset with this. Why is that?
$10. I mean, that's steep. That's steep.
Oh, see, I couldn't disagree more.
I don't think mobile users are. They're just not paying $10 for mobile games. I mean,
no, but there's people that'll plunk down $20, $30, $40, $50 in in-app purchases.
Yeah, I don't think Nintendo wants to make it. I don't want Nintendo to make a game like that for sure.
Right,
but
of
I
course.
Also don't think $10 is a price point for this game that's gonna work for them.
I mean, you get what you pay for, and if you want to get a quality game, I don't think that $10 is at all out of line. I'm going to withhold judgment because I don't know what the game is. I haven't played it. I don't know if it's fantastic. But if it is, head and shoulders above your typical mobile game, then sure, I have no problem at all paying $10 for it if someone's going to make a quality product. And I think this race to the bottom thing, I don't like that. I think that, games should be worth something. And if we don't pay for good games, then we're not going to get good games.
I mean, I'm willing to pay $10 for it, but I think mom and dad are more likely to buy Temple Run 8 than, this Mario game. I'll put it on the iPhone for free, but I don't know, $10.
Oh, sure. I think it's more likely that you're going to grab a free game, but are you going to grab a better game? I don't know. I mean, if Nintendo wants to actually make money from doing this, they have to sell their games at what they're worth. And, you know, it's not like they're charging $30 or $15. I mean, $10, that's like less than the price of two average fast food combos.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to buy it for $10. I'm just worried that no one else is.
Okay. I think you do make a good point there. I mean, I think it'll do fairly well, but yeah, I mean, it's not going to do as well as it would if it were cheaper. But on the other hand, I do really understand why it's coming in at that price point, and I don't want to devalue Nintendo's work or the work of other developers, and I have no problem paying a premium for a better experience.
Okay. I'm looking forward to playing it. It looks fun. I'm a little skeptical about a touchscreen-based Mario game, but, you know.
Well, it's just an auto runner.
Maybe they figured it out.
We'll see. I mean, you're just hitting the button to jump, basically. So yeah. Hopefully that's fun. That's my biggest concern. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, just this one button gameplay is actually going to be enjoyable. So as long as it is, then, you know, it should be worth the money. If it's not,
we'll know on December 15th.
Yeah, we got about a month to go as we record this, so we will find out. Yeah, for now, I'm remaining hopeful. But speaking of Nintendo's mobile games, the big Miitomo update came out last week. Did you start playing it again? Did you get into it?
I didn't get into it. I mean, I put a Mario costume on my Miitomo dude, but that's about it. I doubt anybody else did much more than that. I know you did. What did you do?
Well, I mean, I did try out all the new features.
Okay.
And I think it did bring some people back for a little bit, but overall, I'm not super impressed with the update. For one thing, it just feels really, really cluttered. You know, it makes it look ugly at best and hard to use at worst. So I could really do without all this extra clutter. Then on top of that, we've got the new features. Decorating your room. You can get new wallpapers and new floors. And just for playing this update and trying out some of the new features, Nintendo's rewarding you with free stuff that's pretty cool, like a Mario theme or a Zelda theme or a Metroid theme or a Splatoon. And those are kind of the coolest ones, so that's nice they gave them to you for free.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get other ones, instead of being able to buy them and spend your in-game coins, you have to play, you know, a luck-based game to get new floors and wallpapers. It's like, you know what, that's not worth my time and effort. I've already got the best, coolest-looking ones, so I'm not going to bother with this, so that seems kind of pointless. And then you can't decorate your room with anything other than putting pictures up on the walls. And I guess you have to pay money to have more than one up there.
Yeah.
I have like 30,000 coins in the game, but you can't use those on poster slots. I have to pay 99 cents in cash if I want one. And I'm like, no way. Heck no, that's not worth it for me. But you can't. You know, it's not like Animal Crossing where you can be like, oh, now there's an NES in my room, or here is a piranha plant in my room, or here's a model of the Master Sword. Nothing cool like that. I mean, I've got a poster up on my wall of Captain N now, which is kind of hilarious, but nothing that's going to get me coming back.
So yeah, the posters can be literally any picture you have on your phone, right?
Yeah, I mean, they encourage it to be a Mi photo, something that you've done in-game, but I think it can be anything that's on your phone. Let's see, then another one of the new features is direct messages, which I find really inconvenient because you have to send your Mi over to someone else's room, and it's just kind of slow and takes a long time, and it's not really better than any other, you know, private messaging feature. And then we have the Answer Central and Style Central, which are the new public areas to show off your outfits and to answer questions. But with these, you know, you see something on the screen right when you start it up, but if you try to scroll it and see more, it takes a long time to load. So unless you have lots of free time to kill, I just find that, you know, it's not worth it. Like with the questions, a lot of them are recycled from the main quote-unquote game.
Mm-hmm.
If you respond, you can only do one response and no one can respond back. And then with the costumes, too,
yeah.
You know, it shows these costumes at the beginning and they're pretty impressive. But if you're not one of those, you know, first ones you see, I mean, all those have like more than 1,000 likes on them, but if mine doesn't show up there, and of course I made an awesome Mr. T, I have an amazing Mr. T, but you know, it, no one gets to see it. So, you know, it's definitely got people coming back a little bit, but overall I would say I'm not super impressed with the features, and if anything, it might actually encourage me to play less just because of all the extraneous clutter. So
It's just like, how many buttons do they need in each of these screens? It's just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just the second I started this up, it just felt like Nintendo was like, here's another gift, here's another gift, here's another gift. It's like, I get it. You need people to come back to this app and you want to just give people a ton of like prizes and stuff just for playing the dumb game. But it's not enough.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't given up on it yet, but yeah, just not super impressed. On the other hand, I have been playing more Pokemon Go. I don't know if you're aware, but there was an update recently that gives you, you know, way more experience points for your first Pokestop and your first Pokemon catch of the day.
Mm.
So it's a pretty good incentive to play it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I'm still not sure what the point is, really, of my leveling up and catching more Pokemon. There's not really an end game. But I kind of, you know, felt like my progress had really stagnated before.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, plus, they change the distribution of the Pokemon, so instead of getting, you know, 10 zillion Rattatas every day, there's a much wider variety of creatures. At least there certainly are near me, mm-hmm. so that, I think, has taken some good steps forward. And I went out to the park recently where, you know, I used to see tons of people, then it really died off, and then I went, like, really early in the day, like 11 or maybe noon, so school wasn't even out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was about, you know, a dozen or so adults walking through the park
playing.
No
way.
So it is definitely renewed interest.
Wow, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that has renewed interest. But, yeah, I'm not sure if this Miitomo renewed interest will last.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like there needs to be more to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, why don't we take an intermission now? When we come back, we'll discuss this week's big topic, which is the 15 most noteworthy GameCube games. All right, we are back, and we are ready to discuss this week's big topic, which is the 15th anniversary of the Nintendo GameCube system.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to do that by discussing the system's 15 most noteworthy games. Before we get into the list, though, Scott, what's your history with the GameCube? Is this one of your favorite Nintendo systems? Where does it fall on your list?
It's definitely one of my favorites. It's in the top, it's one of top four. If we're including handhelds, it's lower than that for sure. But, but I didn't own a GameCube until later. It was not a system I bought at launch.
That's funny, because it was actually the first Nintendo console system I got at launch.
Oh, wow.
I did not have the NES, did not have the Super Nintendo, did not have the N64.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did have the N64, but that was actually for a friend of mine,
yeah.
So I didn't have one at launch. But yeah, the GameCube was the first one I bought for myself right at launch.
So the Game Boy Color were the only Nintendo systems I didn't buy at launch.
I got that one at launch too.
So I don't have a history really with the GameCube beyond buying it later on, having and then collecting games at video game shows and stuff like that, and buying them off eBay, things that I wanted. So I have about 10 games.
Well, fortunately, there are a lot more worthy games than that.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you think of the system's design? Did you like the fact that it was a purple lunchbox?
I did. I mean, I love the fact that they knew that people were going to be taking this system to their friend's house to play games with, so they made it portable. I mean, it's nice and small. It's compact. It's got a carrying. It's got a handle.
Did you ever actually take it to other people's houses to play?
I never did. I never did. No, never did. But I worked for a television network that is one of the biggest moments in the network, and I was there to see it. Was the host climbing up to the top of a stepladder and dropping the GameCube off of a stepladder along with an Xbox and a PlayStation 2.
Yep. PS2 was the thing at the time.
The only console that survived multiple drops, not just one, was the GameCube. So the Xbox died on the first drop. The PlayStation died, I think, on the first or second drop. The GameCube did not die. I think they either had to take a hammer to it or they had to forcefully throw it down off the stepladder, like heave it towards the ground. So that was X-Play. So if you look up X-Play GameCube, destruction challenge or something, or I don't know what it was, but I'll tweet a link to it. But anyway, I was there watching them drop these things off a stepladder thinking, oh no, you know, I'd like to own one of these things, not have them thrown off a stepladder. But it was really cool that it showed how strong Nintendo makes these things.
You weren't kidding about that Nintendium before, were you?
No, Nintendium is a real thing.
The GameCube was also Nintendo's main system when I started working at Nintendo Power. So, of course, because of that, it's also got a special place for me because, you know, when I started working right there in Nintendo headquarters, it was like, you know, all GameCube pretty much all the time, along with DS, of course. Anyway, let's get into this list of the 15 most noteworthy games. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily the best games, although in a lot of cases it is. Sometimes it's just games that are, different or captivating in some other way. And that is exemplified in no better way than with our number 15 pick, which is Odama.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the president.
No. It's so weird. When you look at...
It's weird. It's the weirdest game. It is weird. That's why it's on here.
I love
because
it. Tell me about it.
It's like a real-time strategy game mixed with a pinball board. And the Odama is this giant sphere. It's basically the pinball that rolls across the battlefield and like crushes the enemy troops. And the thing came bundled with a microphone, and you could give out voice commands to try to move your troops.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that. That's really
neat. At least in theory, that's how it's supposed to work. You know, in practice, it didn't work out that great. And it's just a really, really bizarre game. And, of course, it's all, you know, like, combined with feudal Japanese mythology and history.
Yeah.
So it's certainly not what your typical gamer in North America would expect to see at all.
Yeah, yeah. What struck me watching videos of this game is the amount of screaming happening throughout
well,
the game.
If you're getting crushed by a giant ball, you're going to scream. So.
And you're not, it's funny, I couldn't even tell who was the advancing army and who was my
no,
men.
That's the thing. It's a mess. You can't really tell what's going on. Yeah. I would not call it a great game by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's worth trying just for the sheer weirdness value. Not great, but definitely noteworthy.
All right.
Number 14 would be Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. This game is very divisive, I think, in some ways, because, you know, as you know, after the Super Nintendo, Square parted ways with Nintendo. You know, they had been doing Final Fantasy on Nintendo systems up until then, but then when they went cartridge and PlayStation went with discs, Sony switched over and all their games were, okay, we're going with Sony from here on out. And 7, 8, and 9 all came out on PlayStation 1, and the N64 got a big fat nothing when it comes to Final Fantasy. However, with the GameCube, they brought it back as Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, but it's not a typical Final Fantasy game. It's a basically four-player multiplayer game, sort of an action RPG of sorts.
It looks kind of like Gauntlet, right? Or like the arcade version of Gauntlet, to me anyway.
Yeah, on the most basic level. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean the new Gauntlet, not the old one with the top down.
Yeah, yeah. It is a little bit like that. I mean, as much as, you know, say Diablo is Gauntlet. I think those comparisons are kind of fair on the most basic level. I mean, it totally wasn't what people were expecting from Final Fantasy, and the fact that one of the players always had to be, like, carrying around this chalice was kind of annoying. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think it deserves a place as one of the most noteworthy games on the list just because it was the return of Final Fantasy to the Nintendo Fold one way or another.
It looks like a really fun game. I think it looks beautiful. For a system that's known for having some of the worst graphic overlays to show how many lives you have left and what the name of your character is, this is quite reserved, to say the least. It's well-designed. It looks good. What I'm trying to say is it holds up. It looks like a game that could have been released last year.
Next one, number 13. Oh, this is another game that sort of left the Nintendo fold and then came back. We've got Metal Gear Solid, The Twin Snakes, as our 13th most notable GameCube entry. This was a remake of Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation, but updated with new controls, new moves, vastly better graphics, new cutscenes. It's basically on the list just because Metal Gear Solid is so darn fantastic, and the Nintendo system, the GameCube, got its own unique version of the game.
Does it have the charm, and does it have all the puzzles that you expect from the Metal Gear games?
Well, as I said, it's a remake of the PlayStation game, mm-hmm. enhanced in some ways. I'd say it's not quite as charming because it does some really, you know, goofy stuff with the cutscenes. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think the voices are quite as good as they were in the PlayStation original.
Yeah.
So that's kind of unfortunate. I mean, if I had to choose, I would say the PlayStation game is better, but I don't think that changed the fact that we still got a very cool, very fun, enhanced version of Metal Gear Solid on the GameCube. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you're a Metal Gear fan, you know, certainly worth tracking down and playing. Plus, it kind of paved the way for Solid Snake's appearance in Smash Brothers a few years later. Moving on to number 12, Pikmin. Brand new original series that debuted on the GameCube shortly after launch.
I mean, obviously the gameplay is something people hadn't really seen before on a console. I mean, it's like an RTS, and it's a lot of puzzle stuff happening. I think the charm of it, not to use that word too much here, but it is very charming and such a departure from what, you know, console gamers had up until this point.
Yeah, I mean, it was really the first new IP that Nintendo had done in a long time that had that sort of appeal and staying power that we were used to from them in the, you know, 8-bit and 16-bit mm-hmm. days. Of course, Miyamoto, this was one of his projects, so it had, you know, his sort of brilliance baked in there. And I think that just resonated with a lot of people. It was, you know, cool, unique characters, a different kind of game coming from, you know, one of gaming's greatest creators. It's not the biggest franchise, but it spawned another GameCube sequel. And then we've got, you know, the next one didn't arrive till Wii U. And then we've got a new one coming out on 3DS next year. Mm-hmm. I think just the fact that it spawned this new type of gameplay, a new type of series, I think makes it a good match for this list.
Cool.
The next one on the list is Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg, coming in at number 11. I think that, you know, some people might consider this a weird choice, but man, I thought Billy Hatcher was fantastic.
I watched a speedrun of this game. It was so funny because I had never seen it before until I'd seen this video. I'd never even heard of Billy Hatcher. So tell me about it, because I've only seen someone play it on the internet and doing it as fast as he could.
It's just a really, really fun platformer from the guys over at Sega, from Sonic Team specifically. And yeah, you play as a boy in a chicken suit named Billy Hatcher, which is kind of weird and probably why nobody played the game, because it's such a goofy character. And you're rolling around this giant egg. And it might sound very strange, but it lends itself to all kinds of cool puzzles that you use to, you know, to roll over things and to roll down tracks and to smash things and, you know, to crush enemies. It sounds bizarre, but it's a whole lot of fun. It's just a blast to play, despite having a boy in a chicken suit as the main character. Just a fantastic and unique oddball platformer.
Cool.
Really, really good.
Yeah.
Number 10, Super Mario Sunshine. I suppose in a way you could say that's kind of an oddball platformer, given that it uses the flood as one of the key play mechanics. It's not just about Mario jumping mm-hmm. and throwing fireballs. He's got this water backpack for squirting things and cleaning up muck and rocketing into the sky and shooting across the water. Mm-hmm. Still, it's a Mario game. Mario in the tropics.
Why is this at the bottom of a lot of people's lists of 3D Mario games?
I think people just had very specific expectations based on what they experienced in Mario 64, mm-hmm. and they wanted a lot more of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And in some ways, they got that with you know, the openness and, you know, all the exploration you could do in these worlds. But the focus on the flood as the main gameplay hook is probably the reason why people might have been, you know, let down a little bit if they're expecting just another game like Mario 64. Mm-hmm. But then again, you know, you can't blame Nintendo for continuing to innovate and wanting to do something else that's different and interesting. I mean, most of the times when they make a Mario game, it's very groundbreaking. And so I'm not surprised they don't want to do just more of the same.
Yeah.
Number 9. Beyond Good and Evil.
Tell me about Beyond Good and Evil. I know zero about this game, although it's a fan favorite. It's kind of a cult classic.
Yes. Yeah, and that's kind of why it's on the list. I never really played that much Beyond Good and Evil back in the day, but it's a game that people keep talking about, you know, all these years later. I think it stood out because it was kind of a Zelda-esque game. It had lots of exploration and puzzle solving along with combat. It had a very unique aesthetic, and it had, you know, a pretty compelling story that holds up really well. In fact, the story might even be more meaningful today than it was when the game was released. I think all those things added up to just make a game that really resonated with a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people that played it anyway. A lot of people didn't play it, and the game slipped through the cracks.
Well, I also love the fact that it has a strong female protagonist instead of, you know, your standard Nathan Drake.
Yeah, Jay was definitely a cool character. And so, you know, it did things that, you know, maybe other games did as well, but did them in its own unique way that really made it stand out. And that's why people speak of it in such, you know, reverential tones all these years later.
Did a sequel to this ever come to a Nintendo console, or was it just on like the PS2 and
Well, there's never been a sequel, actually.
Oh, I thought there was a Beyond Good and Evil 2.
It's rumored that Michel Ancel is working on a sequel that's coming to Switch. And, you know, if that happens, I think it's going to make a lot of people very happy. Next up, number 8, Fire Emblem Path of Radiance. This is really on here because it was the first Fire Emblem game to come out on a home console here in the U.S.
Oh, wow. And before that, it was it was on the SNES, but only in Japan? What was the first Fire Emblem?
It was on, I think Famicom was the first one, and then it came out with Super Famicom. And we had gotten some handheld versions. We got on Game Boy Advance here. Mm-hmm. But as far as console goes, it had been ignored up to this point. But then we got it with Path of Radiance. And of course, it brought all the traditional turn-based, grid-based strategy that people were familiar with. You know, brought with it the permadeaths, but also brought, you know, compelling characters and, a whole lot of fun. Number 7, return to third party, Capcom. Beautiful Joe, a very unique action game set in movie land.
This was the first game I bought for the GameCube.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I loved this game, even though it was hard as nails.
It is. It's a really tough game.
But it looks so good. You just want to keep playing it to see what the next, you know, level looks like and what the style of it is. But and the
Very cartoony, very animated. Mm-hmm. As I said, it's set in movie land. So, you know, they can take a lot of liberties and have a lot of fun with it. And it also really played into the play mechanics in that you could do slow motion or fast forward or zoom in. And that's where Beautiful Joe would get his, you know, special abilities from, and trying to figure out how to use these, you know, that was what was cool about the gameplay. But also it was, you know, really, kind of mentally taxing. It was almost like a puzzle trying to figure out, you know, well, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Which is the best power to use here? What's effective? Tough, but really cool.
Yeah. I never, ever finished this game. I think as far as I got was the shark guy in that ballroom.
Oh, ugh. God. Yeah.
So he was tough. It's hard. It's a hard game, but worth it. For sure.
Number 6, Metroid Prime. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Metroid, beloved series, was not around on the N64. It finally came back as a first-person shooter. Certainly, I know a lot of people, myself included, didn't really believe that Nintendo could, you know, turn Metroid into a first-person shooter and make it work. But it did. It totally did. And it's ended up being one of, you know, personally, I would say, the best first-person shooter series, out there of all time.
I'm surprised they haven't remade this. I think that would be easy for them. Not easy, but come on. They've already got an engine in place for remaking these GameCube games. I feel like they could remake this.
I mean, we did get it not too long ago in the Metroid Prime trilogy, but that wasn't really featuring any visual enhancements as far as I recall.
And that was on the Wii?
Yes, it was on Wii. Mm-hmm. You can download it on Wii U. But yes, Trilogy was released on Wii. Cool. And I would say the original is, you know, much better than the sequel because you didn't have that weird light world, dark world mechanic that in theory sounded good, but in practice didn't end up being that great. But yeah, they somehow managed to keep the atmosphere, you know, just as compelling as it was in the classic version. Maybe the atmosphere was even better, actually. I guess maybe more important is that they actually managed to keep the gameplay feeling, you know, very Metroid.
Yeah, even though you can't really see Samus except in the cutscenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you don't really see yourself. You know, it's first person, so.
Yep, despite all that, it still worked beautifully. Next on the list, number 5, Luigi's Mansion. I know this is one that you love, so I will let you talk all about it.
I love it just because it's just so dang cute. I mean, really, it's really one of the cutest, most fun games. It gives Luigi a character when I felt like he was so one-dimensional. Of course, they turned him into like a fraidy cat, but you know,
it was definitely nice to see him get his own game for the first time. I mean, before that, we had Mario was missing, but that doesn't really count. But this time, you know, he was his own character. He was the star. Yeah.
And he was a ghost. Professor Egad was, you know, adorable. Yeah. And exploring that mansion and having to recover some of the ground you've already covered to progress is an interesting way of doing this. When you play the 3DS version, there's multiple mansions that you're going to explore. But this game is just one mansion. You have to kind of figure out how to get from area to area, and you'll find yourself traversing familiar territory to get somewhere else. But there's so many little hidden things, and the ghosts and all the bosses are really, really just creative. Everything's different. Every room feels like a different game, you know? So,
yeah, and lots of really cool puzzles, too.
The puzzles are great, and it actually is a little scary. I mean, it's it's definitely not as...
Yeah, it's got some jump scares, I guess.
It's not as light and cutesy as the 3DS Dark Moon. I really like this, and this coming from somebody who hadn't played it when it first came out, played it many years later. So, yeah, it's one of my favorite games on the system.
Number 4 on the list, Paper Mario, The Thousand Year Door.
Oh, what a great game. I mean, they still haven't made a Paper Mario that's come close to this, so...
That's right. As we mentioned recently, you know, every time people talk about Paper Mario, they say... Why aren't the new ones as good as Thousand Year Door? That's all I want. I want a new Thousand Year Door. I want Thousand Year Door Part 2.
This is a lot of fun puzzles to solve. Not as silver platey, puzzly as some of the later games in the series. You know, I don't like puzzles that are too easy to solve, but I also don't want something that's completely inscrutable where I'm, you know, searching for hours and completely looking in the wrong place. But yeah, what a just great game, fun story, Paper Mario battle system perfected as an RPG here.
I had a lot of fun with a lot of the classic Mario characters. I love the way that Luigi is portrayed in the game. I love the way that Bowser is portrayed. I love the way that Princess Peach is portrayed as well. They just, great writing, great humor, great characterization, just a whole lot of fun.
I agree.
Moving on to number 3, The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker. Very controversial at the time with the new style of Link, the cartoony new kid Link.
Cel-shaded.
But hey, guess what?
Yep.
Yeah, it turned out to be really darn good, and people ended up loving it eventually. Yeah.
I mean, now people will say it's their favorite, almost. I mean,
yeah, a lot of people do.
It's really stunning. And it's also held up by people who make games as one of the most beautiful games ever made. So that's...
Yeah, that's one of the things.
That's pretty crazy. Still.
The visual style holds up really, really well.
Yeah, if you look at this game...
technology changes, but it still looks gorgeous on GameCube.
If you look at this game still on the GameCube and you play it on a nice screen, you will be stunned how good this game looks.
Yeah, I mean, I do acknowledge that a lot of people don't like the sailing element, but it never really bugged me personally. I don't feel like it, took up too much time, but I loved exploring the sea and visiting the different islands. And, it has some really, really great story elements. I'm sure I've talked about them before, so I don't want to belabor it, but, going into Old Hyrule is one of the obvious high points of probably the entire series. I love this version of Ganon, and Tetra is a pretty cool character as well. So just lots of fun stuff. And I love the combat. The combat's so fluid in this game.
I'm still playing through this on the Wii U in HD.
Oh, the HD
have
version.
You played through it in HD?
I have played through it twice in HD, my friend.
Oh my gosh. Wow. You're going to have to come over and help me out.
Next on the list, number 2, Resident Evil 4.
The Resident Evil series, when I think of Resident Evil, my brain doesn't jump to, Nintendo.
No, it wouldn't, because up until that time, it had mostly been on PlayStation. There was a port of Resident Evil 2 on the N64. Somehow they crammed that all into a cartridge. But for a time, Capcom was like, we love the GameCube. We're really going to get behind it. And so they decided to make games like Beautiful Joe, Killer 7, and also Resident Evil 4. And it was originally supposed to be a GameCube, a Nintendo exclusive. And it arrived, and it was pretty darn amazing. It redefined Resident Evil. It proved that it didn't have to have those crazy tank controls. It proved it could look way more beautiful than ever before. It proved it could still be utterly terrifying while still modernizing it. It's a scary-ass game. You know, everyone remembers that opening village scene where you're just swarmed by zombies and there's the crazy chainsaw guy. It's a trip. It's exhilarating in a crazy, scary way. Obviously, it ended up coming to other systems as well. It ended up coming over to PS2. It didn't end up remaining exclusive. But, that's the way to play the game. If you're going to play Resident Evil 4, you should probably play the GameCube original. It's arguably still the best version of the best game in this beloved series.
Wow.
So, and I guess this brings us to number one, and that would be Super Smash Bros. Melee.
So this game lives on. It is competitively played at tournaments to this day. So why Melee and why not the Wii version or the N64 version?
Well, I wish I had a really good answer for that. I mean, I will say that compared to the N64 version, this is night and day. It it improved so much. It looked way, way, way better. The controls were a lot smoother and more responsive, and that made it more fun. They really increased the number of characters. And then this was the installment where they changed it up to not just be a fighting game featuring all of Nintendo's most beloved characters, but basically like a history lesson in all of Nintendo. This is where they started getting into, all these nice little details and, including all sorts of information. And it was just a huge love letter to Nintendo fans. So that was one of the things that I really loved about it. As far as why it continues to persist on the competitive scene and why people aren't going with Brawl or the Wii U version instead, I don't know. I guess just because it was just so darn good. It worked so well with that GameCube controller. Mm-hmm. And, people just invested, so much time with the game.
Yeah.
That, I think they just don't want to move on.
Yeah, to the point where people are playing, the Wii U Smash Bros. With a GameCube controller because, that's what they're used to.
Yeah, totally. It also added, some really cool single-player modes in there. It was just fun. It was just fun, man. Lots of fun. This is definitely the Smash Brothers game that I spent the most time with.
It's funny. If you told me that Nintendo would be at the top of the list of people's favorite, competitive fighting games, Nintendo was was the creator of one of the world's favorite competitive fighting games, I would have, that just sounds like madness to me. But
I think that just like with a lot of games, you get the groundwork with the first one, and then with the second one, they really just polish it up. Everything comes together, and it ends up being, the real true vision of what the game is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's really the case with Super Smash Bros. Melee, and that's why it continues to be, so popular, even today, even with several sequels, that is such a beloved game. That does it for our list of the top 15 most notable GameCube games, but I do want to give a shout out to two more honorable mentions, those being Eternal Darkness, that one being especially noteworthy for the crazy insanity effects, and then also Animal Crossing, that one being noteworthy for bringing a whole new series and a whole new genre to players in North America.
So do you think we're going to get GameCube games on Virtual Console on the Wii U at all? Do you think it just...
Not at this point.
No. You don't think it's going to come?
No. I mean, the Wii U, it's kind of on its last legs. I think if they were going to introduce GameCube games to Virtual Console, then they would have done so already. I mean, it seems weird that they haven't. I mean, if you can do Wii games, why not GameCube games? It seems like something they should do to me. But, I don't think so. If Switch has a virtual console, hopefully it'll be available on there, but that remains to be seen.
Well, another reason not to throw out your Wii. Keep that Wii hooked up.
Anyway, like I said, it is the GameCube's 15th birthday on October 18th, so happy birthday, Nintendo GameCube.
Happy birthday.
And with that, I think that pretty much wraps up the show. But, you know, I think before we go, we've still got time for a dramatic reading. This time, I'm going to read an excerpt from the manual from one of the titles available on the NES Classic, and that is Bubble Bobble. In a strange and magical forest full of danger and delight, where everything is good to eat and jolly round dinosaurs bounce and play in peace, live two such creatures named Bub and Bob. One day, Bub and Bob got word that two of their Brontosaurus buddies had been abducted by Baron Von Blubba, who lived in the evil forest just beyond the horizon. So Bub and Bob set off to find their friends and bring them to safety. But the Baron had sent many ill-tempered and hungry beasties to the forest to stop Bub and Bob from finding their friends. Only Bub and Bob's magic bubble-blowing powers could save them from spontaneous ingestion.
Spontaneous ingestion.
That's what it says.
So I never really played Bubble Bobble until I got the NES Classic. I enjoy it. It is just an arcade game.
It is. It was an arcade game originally.
The first several levels are just dead simple. I'm guessing the difficulty ramps up, but yeah, it's a cute game, arcade game.
Yeah, it's got Brontosaurus buddies. So
and a spontaneous digestion.
A spontaneous ingestion.
Ingestion, not spontaneous digestion.
No, that would be just too weird.
Nobody's eating anything. It's blowing bubbles. I don't understand, but anyway.
I guess it's someone who likes to eat Brontosaurus. They don't even look like Brontosauruses to me, but, you know. Regardless, I would say that does it for this week's show. As always, you can find us at powerpros.podbean.com, and you can follow us at PowerProsPod on both Facebook and Twitter. You can also follow me, The Hoff, on Twitter, at Chris The Hoff, and you can find Scott at Plastic Bugs. You can email us at powerprospod@gmail.com, and of course, if you like the podcast, it would be great if you would give us a rating on iTunes. Thanks for listening, everybody. For myself, Scott Michella,
I have no idea what to say,
and my secret crush, Amy Rose,
if only Sonic were here,
we will see you next time.